Accession number 31448, Mr. Roy Jones, Reel 10. Now, so anything else about this course, your commando course?
Not really, no. It's
how did they assess you? I mean, did everyone pass? Or
yeah, well, at the end of, I think it was week 7, we had a week of passing out.
Now, what does that mean?
Right, now this was, there was a speed march. I forget the length of it now. It's such a long time ago. That you had to complete in such a time, but you did that as a squad. There was the scramble course that had to be done in a certain time. You did that individually. But the big one, there was the speed march and firing at the end of it, that's right. You do a speed march of about, I think it was 10 mile. And that was walk 100 yards, run 100 yards, walk 100 yards, run 100 yards, 10 mile. Then at the 10 mile finished at the range inside the infantry, inside the commando training centre. And you had to fire, I think it was 10 rounds of ammunition. And you had to score so many points. But if you've tried firing a rifle after running, and running and walking for 10 mile at the end of it, and then when you were there again, then you'd have to run forward again, put your gas mask on, and then fire more ammunition, and you have to have so many hits. But the big one there, the passing out one, was the 30 mile cross country across Dartmoor.
Now tell me about that one.
And that was a killer, that. Here again, things differ now from where the, when we did that, we were taken out from the commando school in 3-ton trucks. And the tarpaulin was down on the truck, so we didn't know where we were going. Then the truck stopped somewhere on the edge of Dartmoor. And you were dropped off in syndicates of 2. And all you were given was a map and a compass bearing. And you had to get to this place, because I never ever forgot the name of the place. Cyclops Bridge, it was called. And you had to do it in, I think it was 8 hours. 30 mile across Dartmoor in 8 hours. If you didn't do it, you were back the next day. Now, they just dropped, I think we were Syndicate C, mate of mine, and dropped us off. And they just said, hello, your meal's 30 mile away. Give us a compass bearing, that was it, a map, that was it. And the point where we had to find, which was Cyclops Bridge. So, it might be difficult for people to understand if they never ever used a compass. You don't have anything metal on you when you're doing a bearing, because it's fatal. And it's not unknown for people, say, even on Dartmoor, where you think you're walking in a straight line, and I defy anybody, you can walk in a straight line for maybe 100 or 200 yards as you think. Take a compass bearing and you'll probably find that instead of being straight ahead, your compass bearing could show it at a complete right angle. And that's where a lot of people went wrong. They didn't believe it. They said it's impossible because we've marched in a straight line, but you don't. I think a lot of people tend to veer, especially if you're right-handed, you tend to veer to the right. Maybe you don't even realise that you're doing it, but you're gradually going over like that. And it's uncanny, it is, how far you can be out in such a short space of time. So the idea is when you take a compass bearing, only one of you has the compass, you take all your equipment off, leave your rifle down, your tin hat off the lot, and then you take your compass bearing. And the thing is, you pick a point not too far away, and you could be taking a compass bearing every 400 or 500 yards. But it's better to do that than go on and suddenly find that you've got sometimes turned back on yourself, and you just wouldn't believe it. You're in a wide expanse of space, and you think to yourself, well, I've been going in a straight line all the while, you know, and it's totally doing this. Anyway, 8 hours to do it in. And I'll never forget it, my mate and I, we come to this bloody big hedge in front of us. And how are we going to get over this? I thought, look at the length that way. Oh, so we decided to go over it. So all it was the bloody rifles got through over first. And then one helped one up, and then the other one dragged the other one up, and over we went. But we made it in the 8 hours. And what they used to do then, they still do the same routine now. When you finish, if you finish in time, you're issued with your green berry at the end of it. So it's
Is that a big thing, getting you a green?
It is. The green berry is a very, they call it the coveted green berry. And I feel now that it's a big thing in the Royal Marines to win your green berry. It's something, and I've still got mine upstairs, incidentally. It's a big thing. You know, you've reached the end, and you've achieved what you set out to do. A lot of people may think it's a silly, you know.
Did everyone?
But no.
I'm wondering about the failure rate.
There wasn't. Well, what happens? Anybody that doesn't come up to scratch in each stage of training throughout are back squadded. So it could take you, instead of in my day 12 months, it could have taken another fella 2 years where he gets back squadded. But by the time they reach Bickley, they'll be all right. But it could have taken them 3 or 4 times longer than it should have done to get there. Totally different from now. I mean, now they reach a stage of training. If they don't want to carry on, they don't. They can come out. And I think this is, in my day, that if you signed on as a regular for 7, 12 or 22, that was it. You couldn't buy yourself out. So you made a decision, and you knew very well that was it. I think this is the failure today. Whereas as now, I think they go in and they go to Limpston. And if they can't hack it at Limpston, they can buy themselves out. And I think it's an awful waste. It's a waste of people's time. It's a waste of money. Because if they sign, nobody asks you to join, but if they sign, what I'm saying is, then that's it. And I think then your attitude completely alters. If you know that you're not going to get out, you signed, you've committed yourself, so be it. A lot of people may not agree with me, but I think there's an awful lot in the Corps that would now.
Now, anything else happened while you were there at Bickley?
Yes, the one big thing, which is a big thing for me, was when you've no inclination. They always issue a commando medal, and that's for the best all round in commando training. No favourites there, none. And when I did the Did we do the scramble course? I can't remember now, but I know I'd done my wrist somewhere. It must have been after I'd done the 30 miler, because I did that and I passed everything out, but I'd done my wrist. And we were on the passing out parade at the Commando Training Centre, and I couldn't use my rifle because of my wrist. And we fell in, and then they come to issue the commando medal. And my name was called out, and there it is there.
Now, that obviously meant a lot to you.
It meant a lot for me for what I told you what went on at Limpson. Because that fella, Marine Troubridge, didn't cut it there. And that's my commando medal there, and it's got the Royal Marine crest on one side. On the other side, it's got the commando dagger, and the world surrounding it is for outstanding ability. So it does mean a lot to me, yeah. And I think my outlook as regards promotion then was, now I look back, was absolutely ridiculous. Because I think that I could have, you know, got me promotion if I'd have had a different attitude. But I didn't let that interfere or detract me in any way from what job I had to do while I was in the Corps.
So what happened next then? You were there till September.
We were there till August. September.
August, September, yeah.
And then I went back to Royal Marine Barracks, Eastney. And I did, no, early on I said I got 80.2% at the AA. That, the gunnery school previous was recruits gunnery.
Yeah.
I got over 70% of that. So when we finished it, the commando training centre, we trained Marines now, that was it. I went back to Eastney Barracks on the 19th of September 49, and on the 27th of September, October 49, I did my AA3 course. Remember I said early on that if you got over a certain amount, recruits gunnery, they automatically took you back. So I did my AA3 course.
Now, what did that consist of?
That was a proper gun layer course, the one I was talking about before, for anti-aircraft.
So that's the one where you learnt the layers thing? That
yeah, it's on pom-poms and...
So we covered that before?
We covered that before, yeah.
Nothing else about that then, at Eastney?
No, that was it at Eastney. Then I'd done that course, and then there was a notice put on the board at Portsmouth for, they were forming a tug of war team to train for the Royal Tournament. So I put my name down with a lot of other people. And then when they got the amount of people they wanted, we went on parade, and the CO came to see us, and he said, right, gentlemen, you've all volunteered for the tug of war team. Now, I must impress upon all of you, if any of you have done this to dodge a draft, he said, you're going to find it very, very hard way of dodging a draft. So that was his word. So obviously we trained then for the tug of war team, and boy, Joe, was he right. We walked around Eastney Barracks like a load of crabs. We didn't have to get in blues or anything. We just wore denim trousers, old football jerseys. It was the gear it was. Didn't wear a hat. And we used to report it. We had he was a former Royal Marine, but he was a civilian. But he was training the tug of war team for the Royal Tournament, which incidentally in them days was held at Earl's Court. And first thing there was, right, down to the beach at Eastney, and it's all pebbles, and we wore ammunition boots, the big boots, black gaiters, your denim trousers, football shirt, down on the beach, and you all took two sandbags, empty sandbags with you. And we're all saying, what's the sandbags for? I said, Wait and see. You'll soon find out. So he gets down to the beach. He said, right, half fill each bag with the stones off the beach. So he did that. He said, right, I think the lampposts are somewhat like, they may be about 100 yards apart, I think, lampposts on the beach itself. See, you start at one lamppost. Right, pick your sandbags up. Now, three lampposts. Now, you're walking on these pebbles, and what you're doing, you're taking one pace forward and sliding half a pace back with these. And gradually, you can feel your hands with the weight just opening on their own. They're just going like that. They're just opening on their own. And if you see some of the contortionists there trying to keep the sandbags in the hands before to get to the other end. Anyway, that was all part of the training, this was, to strengthen your grip. And that was all, to strengthen your grip for the rope. And also up here. So it consisted of an awful lot of that, till you reach a stage where each sandbag was almost full of the pebbles. Then you do what they call a static pulls, and they had a proper thing in the drill shed at Eastney Barracks. Now, a tug-of-war pitch, if you like, is always made up of peat. It's like a layer of peat. At least indoor is. I mean, if you're doing it outside, you could use grass or whatever, but indoors it's a bed of, I forget what they used for the bed, but the top layer was peat. And what they had a rope that went through two blocks, went through a block, through a block at the bottom, up, round a block, down to a big steel cage with weights in. We had two teams, light heavy and heavyweight. There was lightweight, lightweight, light heavy and heavyweight. I was in the light heavy. I was in the 11, 12 stoners. And you get 10 of you on the rope. One was anchorman. And you had to start pulling this weight up, which was the equivalent weight of another team, which made it worse because you're pulling it through three blocks, which makes it harder. So you'd get into position, you say, pick up the rope, take the strain, heave. And you have to keep your back straight, keep your body off the rope, and go forward, go backwards. Just push with your legs. You don't pull with your arms. You push with your legs. You only hold on with your arms. You don't pull it with your arms. You pull it with your legs. You get halfway up and he'd shout, hold. So then you just sit like that. And that was the part where you used to get fellas that feel the hands going. And the tendency was then, once your hands started to go, your tendency was to lean over like that to your right. Of course, then you'd lean on the rope. So the chap behind you then has got your weight as well as. So this is all part of the training, this static weight thing. And that's all we did, that on the beach with sandbags, in the drill shed, live pulls, static pulls and what have you. And we went in the Hampshire County Championships. We won that. Then there was one tug-of-war team, army team, which were absolutely brilliant. And it was the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, Feltnam, RAOC Feltnam. And we went to the Royal Tournament, and we got to the final. I felt you're walking round in a navy blue tracksuit, big letters, Royal Marines, on your back. You felt the gear. And we got to the final and we met RAOC Feltham. And they beat us 2-1 in the final. And after that, we met the Queen. And that was when, I think that was the start of the demise of the tug of war at the Royal Tournament, because you used to use resin on your hands. And when you lined up at the end and the Queen come along in a nice white gloves, shaking hands, and your hands were sticking to the gloves, So they stopped using resin, and eventually that it died a natural death at the Royal Tournament tug of war. But after that, we chased RAOC Feltham. Every meeting we went to, we missed them. And as I say, the Hampshire County Champions, the one that said we won, we met them in the final of the Hampshire County Championship and beat them. So we got our own back there. And that was the end of my gunnery course plus tug of war at the Royal Tournament.
So when did you finish at Eastney then? November?
I finished Eastney, where I joined the Belfast next. I left Eastney Barracks on the 15th of October 1950 to join the Belfast.
Oh, so you were there a long time.
Yeah.
You were there, a year.
A year, yeah.
Anything else happened while you were there?
No, very, very quiet. As I say, I did that gunnery course. I think that was about 12 weeks. And then the tug of war, and that was it. It was just quiet after that.
Now, how did you get your posting?
I just looked. We had to keep our eye on the notice boards, obviously, part one and part two orders and drafting orders, that was it. And I checked drafting orders one day and there's my name. Joined a detachment at HMS Belfast. And then we were informed to parade the next morning. There was over 100 of us to join HMS Belfast. So we started detachment training then.
What's that?
Well, I think we went out to... Oh, forget the name of the place. It was only a week. I think it was more or less to get the 100 of us together, because you were lucky if you knew anybody. You know, they could be from all over the place they came. I knew two or three that were in the tug of war team with us, went on the Belfast. So we just did a bit of detachment training, and all that was firing on the range, and there was no route marches or anything like that. It was just getting to know, everybody, getting to know everybody. And then we joined the ship in October. Wait a minute, where is it?
And what rank were you? You were just an ordinary Royal Marine?
Marine, yeah. We joined the Belfast on the 16th of October.
And where was she when you joined her?
Chatham. And what you did was, we fell in with the Royal Marine Band on Portsmouth Eastney Barrack Parade Ground. Brought us to attention, right turn, and the order was given to China, quick march. The band struck up and we marched from Eastney Barracks to the docks with the band. Not to the docks, to further down the road, and picked up the three tonners who took us to Chatham then.
That's what I was going to say,
yeah. Yeah, it was a long walk, wasn't it? Yeah. I'm getting mixed up. That was when we did the worry, we marched through the dockyard, but it was only from... But anyway...
And what were your first impressions on joining her at Chatham?
The Belfast.
Because it's your first ship, isn't it?
Yeah. Apprehension. She looked wonderful, I must admit. I've always liked warships, mate. I've always liked the look of a warship. I don't know why, but she was there, Battleship Grey and what have you, and she looked all right, you know. She just went on board, down to the mess deck, stowed our gear away, and then we were given a part of ship to keep clean. Then we have to muck in and store the ship then with supplies and all sorts.
And what do you remember about storing ship?
Well, you just carry all the victuals on board. We were bringing all sorts of stuff, food, and you know, whatever wanted bringing on, we brought on. It was all brought to the jetty in trucks, and we had to take it off the trucks. Matlows and all, they all did it. Store ship. And I had my birthday on there. That was joined it on the 16th of October, and I was 22 on the 23rd. And I'd never tasted rum before, and I was a bit. Jimmy James, the sergeant, absolutely brilliant fella. Him. I'll tell you a bit more about him later on. He got killed in Korea with us, but he. I was really bad. I was in the toilet to shore being sick.
Now, how come that? Are they just giving you the sippers, rum, and gulpers?
Yeah. See, you know, I had entitled to a tot, but they were coming up, yeah, scouse, sippers, or, you know. And you don't realise how much you're getting down, so it's a bit, what name, and Jimmy James found me in the toilet, and God rest his soul, he just gave me a telling off, and that was it. He never took it any further. He knew it was my first ship, so he was pretty good, he was.
Now tell me about your your mess deck, the Royal Marine mess deck. Which one is it? Do you know its number, or where is it?
It's starboard side. You know, you walk, if the midship gangway was down, and you walk in, you walk on starboard side, turn forward, and you go inside, and as you walk in, there's a gangway going that way as well, and I think the sick bay is over there, over on the port side. You come this side, and there's a hatch going down. It's where the office is now on the Belfast, down the steps. That used to be the Royal Marines mess deck.
Now, could you describe it? It's, you know, it's your first mess deck, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, never having been aboard the ship before, I didn't know what to expect. So when I went down on the mess deck, it didn't seem that bad to me. You know, because my first ship, I didn't know any different. We all had our hammocks and what have you, and it looked quite big, the mess deck, because it went right round. It was quite big, the mess.
So how many would there be in it?
100 of us, just over 100, I think. So the mess deck stretched the width of the ship. You had the starboard side of the mess deck and the port side of the mess deck. So, you know, there's quite a few mess tables on. My mess was 38 mess. It was a little mess. As you went down the ladder into the Royal Marines mess deck, you just turned almost back on yourself, and it was in that corner. Incidentally, it's where the girl's got her office now. The last time I went on board, I was speaking to her. That's where our mess used to be there. But that's where it was. And the lockers were in a small space forward of the mess. In the mess, like, but forward of the mess. But there were only a small locker each we had. Most of your kit was packed away in your kit bag and stored away. There was a big hammock netting in the middle of the mess where all the hammocks went.
Did you have a table?
Yeah, we had a mess table. Each mess, when I say I was on 38 mess, that was the number of our mess table, 38. There was 40, all different numbers, they were different tables. Some of them had 20-odd on a mess. We were lucky we only had ate on our mess table. It was the gear, that little mess I was on.